out of the 613 commandments that Jesus would have chosen, he chose two, pointing to their inseparability. One makes sense only in the context of the other. That is why Jesus joins them together. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. The first part comes from Deuteronomy 6:5, which says, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with thy whole heart, and with thy whole soul, and with thy whole strength. The discrepancy here with mind and strength. You know, for the Jews, they would have understood that strength was found in the mind. But anyone else who was unfamiliar with the culture of the Jews, they would need that clarified. Hence, you have Matthew here not including it, because he's writing to the Jews. But Luke, and who's a lawyer, goes forth in writing to the Gentiles, includes the word strength in there. So anyways, out of the 613 commandments, out of all the things that Jesus could have focused on, he focused on love. Love rather than fear. 1 John 4:16 and 18. God is love, and whoever remains in love remains in God and God in him. There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment, and so one who fears is not yet perfect in love. So it's nice to know that, you know, Jesus is saying that is the greatest commandment, to love. Well, how is it that we can love? What does that love look like, especially in those three aspects that he's calling us to, heart, soul, and mind? Well, the love that is due to God from the heart must be free from the love of the things of this world. To live detached. To say, only in God do I depend. He alone is my sufficiency. In Him I have everything. And this is something that you and I will be working toward each and every day. This is not something that all of a sudden we will have and reach, attain perfection at some point in our life. We will always be working toward this. Why? Because as individuals, as humans, filled with concupiscence, there will always be times in which we will fall towards those lesser goods. But it is that constant striving, that constant purification, that constant seeking of God is the way in which we can increase in that love of God from the heart. And so it's not found in our possessions. It's not found even in relationships, albeit good ones. And sometimes we can get mired in that. Sometimes we say, well, you know, this person exhibits to me the love of God, which can certainly be a true statement. But then once perhaps the person betrays you or is not faithful or lies, you know, do we equate that with the love of God? We believe that God's love then has betrayed us. You see the distinction? You know, it's important to make sure that we don't have that attachment to that person and say, well, you are the barometer by which God loves me. And it's hard. It's hard for some of us. Whether it be having those relationships or having the things that we currently have, if they're taken away from us, if they're all gone, we curse God. So I can't believe you did this to me. I was so good to you. Where is our heart? Where is our faith? Where is it in everything? Is it all invested in God? It's a love that cultivates humility, trust, obedience, and confidence in God. So we have to ask ourselves, how detached am I about the things of the world? And am I zealous for the salvation of souls? To do what is necessary to point people to God at the cost of possibly losing relationships and friends? That's a tough question. And am I so zealous, and I want to point everyone to Jesus Christ, that I know there were some people who will not accept the message. I know there were some people who will mock, deny, ridicule that belief. do we just step back then and say, oh, okay, all right, well, at least I tried, let's go have a beer, you know? Or do we really stick to the point and say, you know, I'm concerned for you more, not just about what you think of me, but that I get to spend, God willing, time with you forever in heaven, right? That's the ultimate love. You know, that's the love that God calls us to. So does my life profess Jesus as the only way to salvation? Or do I believe that my Catholic faith is about fraternal harmony and coexistence, losing supernatural faith and placing instead my hope in man rather than Jesus, and the gift he's given us in the Catholic Church, which professes those means of salvation? The love that is due to God from the soul is the recognition and unfailing acceptance that all good is in God, and without him, there is no good. So when we allow and foster doubt within us about the Father's goodness, our souls lack the love that is owed to God from the soul. So when we find ourselves in perilous, difficult situations, and we doubt God's goodness, or we think, well, of course this is how things will play out, we need to still work towards growing that love of God from the soul. So it means that all good is in God, and without him, there is no good. The love that is due to God from the mind is present in those whose very thoughts lead to God and the exaltation of his kingdom, whose wisdom is reflective not of this world, whose intellect find delight in the things of God, and whose memory embraces all that is good. It is found through the study of our faith and religion. St. Thomas Aquinas would say that the purpose of religion, of our Catholic faith, is to give honor to God. We pay God honor and reverence, not for his sake, but for our own sake. Because by the very fact that we revere and honor God, St. Thomas says, our mind is subjected to him. So religion then orients our mind to demonstrate how we may love him. And despite the flaws that exist in man who participate in religion, and the scandals and hypocrisy that inevitably come, for who is perfect but God alone and his handmaid, our Blessed Mother Mary, it never negates the objective good that religion seeks to accomplish. Sometimes you have those individuals who will say, well, I am spiritual but not religious, right? And, you know, it's as if you're saying, you know, well, I'm following the law, I'm just following the law of my heart, right? You know, it's like, well, gee, I don't know how helpful that is. I mean, I suppose to some degree anything is good, but, you know, not to the highest degree. And this is the purpose of religion, that we may know for indeed a fact how it is that God is leading us to. It's a scary thing to not have religion, to not have the Catholic faith, and to just say, I just believe in God and do whatever I will. We know that even in the existence of Christian denominations, it's easy to find that, you know, one believes in one thing and the other believes the opposite. You know, that should frighten us. That shouldn't say, oh great, then I can just pick and choose and I'm fine. Really? We all have a responsibility to discover the truth. We all have this obligation incumbent upon us to make sure that what we're doing is of God, is truly following him. Simply following one's heart, then, is not enough. The Lord had warned us in Jeremiah 17:9, the heart is perverse above all things and unsearchable. In another translation, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately corrupt. So after we have loved God with all our heart, mind, and soul, the second part Jesus emphasized is the love of neighbor. But loved through our love of God. Again, highlighting the importance of inseparability here. To love apart from God is no longer love in the purest form. What we end up having is a counterfeit. One born out of our sinfulness rather than our fidelity to God, who is all good and deserving of all our love. While the counterfeit love takes many different forms, one popular form would be one that focuses solely on the needs of a neighbor. That is to say that what the neighbor needs, that is what I will acquiesce to. That is what I will grant. That is what I will give. That is my way of helping my neighbor. This is dangerous by the very fact that sometimes the things in which people ask for help with in the particular method they are requesting is not for their good. Of course, there are some times when this is obvious that it is good and it will fall in line with what the Lord would have wanted, and there's no need to stop and pray and discern. Like, for example, a crying infant who needs food. You know, you don't sit there and go, is this what God is asking me to do? To feed this child? You know, yeah, you do it, right? There's no need for discernment there. It's an obvious thing. Yet, there are times in which, as I said before, listening to the individual and granting that which is requested may not be in that person's best interest. So, for example, when a man is addicted to drink and asks for money, you know, the path by which he is helped is not by giving a handout. You know, he said, oh, you need money? Well, here it is. And you might say, well, Father, isn't that judging? You know, shouldn't I not judge? You know, well, we should also use our intellect, right? God gave that to us for a reason. You know, it's not so much judging insofar as, you know, judging the state of their soul. It's judging in the state of just common sense. You know, the individual is struggling with alcoholism and he's asking for money. Well, guess what? There are other ways to help that individual than just give him what he just asked for. So if you know he needs help with food, you know, you might buy a gift card to Subway. Or maybe if you know that he is struggling financially with paying his rent on time, then you help him in that regard, right? So we help the individual, but not in the way they ask, but in a way that is true charity. And that's hard. That's harder. It's far easier to just throw money. Take it. You need $50, take it. Well, I gave it to the person and I hope they're going to use it for however they will. And no, actually invest yourself in that person. Actually care about that person enough to say, well, Lord, what is this person really needing from me? You know, just like we heard in the gospel today, you know, if the person gives you his cloak, right, as a way to say, you know, I'll make good on my payment. Well, as it's cold outside, you know, don't keep holding on to it. Give it back to him so at least he can be warm for the night. You know, so we've got to think that through. Critically think how it is that we can live out authentic charity. So that's why it's important that we don't simply give the person what they're asking for. We have to look at it in view with what the Lord might be asking us to do with that person. That is authentic love. That might not always be easy to discern or figure out, but it is necessary to do if we want to live out the teachings of Christ. And that is why we are called to adhere and protect the teachings of the church. Its purpose is to demonstrate our unyielding fidelity to God, who promises us the glory of heaven to those who do the Father's will. Our clear defense of church teaching is meant to provide the tangible ways by which we profess Jesus as our way to salvation. And some individuals find a great hardship with this, you know, so much so that they just want to change everything in the church to fit their own way of life because it's easier, it's better, it makes me feel good. You know, we got to really be careful about feelings, right? You know, some may say, well, I just feel uncomfortable when I hear these words from the gospel. I feel uncomfortable when I hear when the church says this and ask me to, I don't like it. It doesn't mean run away. It doesn't mean it's wrong. It means pressing in on that and asking the Holy Spirit, well, Lord, what are you saying here? Right? Again, it goes back to the primacy of love that belongs in the heart. The humility, that obedience, the trust, the attachment from things, ideas, people, so that you can be more attached to God. You see, following these teachings of the church and what Christ has outlined is not simply just for us to be recognized as good people. I don't know how many times I'm tired of hearing that. You know, oh, Father, I'm still striving to be a good person. You got to be holy. God's calling you to be holy. It's far different than just being a good person, right? I haven't killed anybody. Okay, well, congratulations, you know. It's like it should be this constant striving, right, for perfection. Not to the part where, of course, we find ourselves getting this analysis paralysis and we don't do anything. No, that's not the point. But the point is that there's always this constant striving to do that which is pleasing to God. Right? This is the one life. This is the one life we have. We have to make it count. And so that's why it's so important that, you know, when we find ourselves challenged by church teaching, that we spend time to listen, to think, to pray, to come to understand. Holy Spirit, help me understand. What are these things? Why am I struggling the way I'm struggling? It's so easy to just abandon ship. It's so easy to go somewhere else and say, well, I don't want to hear that. So let me go somewhere else. Pray. Actually give that over to the Lord. See, that's the way that we help lead our brothers and sisters on the way to salvation. Leading anyone into error does no one any favors, only serving to appease one's conscience at the expense of eternal, irreversible consequences after death. So in terms of our practical application, as there are certainly many things that are in our lives that we can apply this to, one that has surfaced over the past couple of days have been over the comments of Pope Francis. The firestorm that came from that. Well, individuals are saying, yes, Pope Francis. Other individuals are saying, what are you doing, Pope Francis? And do we just kind of step back a little bit? Do we understand where these comments are coming from? They're from a documentary. They're from a documentary. It wasn't even like from an Angelus address. It wasn't in a meeting with the bishops. It wasn't in an encyclical. It's from a documentary. So by the very media that is presented there, anyone who's ever been interviewed, you know that things that are presented are not exactly what they say. Now, of course, the argument could be made, you know, that this was his intent all along, and others will come to his defense and say, you know, it's taken out of context. I would like to hear what he has to say, right? I think it's far more prudent to just put the question to him and say, please give us clarity. Oh, please give us clarity. But what I will comment on is the fact that such words, no matter what context, obviously has produced some stirrings and some individuals' hearts as to say, oh, what is this to me now? What are we to do? You know, see, it's so important that we spend some time whenever these things come about doing some critical thinking. You know, I think our advancement in technology, while certainly some of it is good, lessens our ability to really want to spend that time thinking. You know, we're more concerned about sound bites. Or what do they hear? What is this? Okay, let's jump on that. And not even thinking about the person or what was said before. So what I'd like to present to you is the I don't know if it's a press release, but it was something that the Archdiocese had given out to the clergy that I wish to share with you, just to clear this all up. So Pope Francis, in fidelity to his mission to guard the deposit of faith, has constantly given witness to the truth of marriage according to God's plan and the Church's teaching on the sacrament of marriage. That it is a sacred and unbreakable union between one man and one woman, who are no longer two but one flesh, Catechism 1604. Further, acts of sexual intimacy outside of marriage, as it is established by God, are gravely contrary to the virtue of chastity and God's plan for human flourishing. Cross-reference Catechism 2380, 2400. In our Archdiocese, Archbishop Vigneron joins the Vicar of Peter and all other members of the College of Bishops to affirm these saving teachings of Christ. So this teaching does not change. What do we believe? One, holy, Catholic, and apostolic faith. Apostolic. It means it has its roots in the times of the apostles. It means it follows the hermeneutic continuity by which there is this unbroken line of teaching. Because we know that these are the things that lead to the life-saving truth of Jesus Christ. These are the things in which Christ has established for us. It is present, again, not to make us uncomfortable. It is present that we might find life, that our life may be found, God willing, in the glory of heaven after death. The greatest commandment is to love God with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength, leading to the love of neighbor. Anything less would be a departure from the truth and a counterfeit to love.